Hey, it's Chaz and AJ in the morning.
Hey, what's going on?
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Here are some of the best parts from today's show.
Listen to it, please. Thank you.
And please subscribe, share, like, comment, all that stuff.
All of it, please.
Thank you. Howard Wasdin, former Navy SEAL, Team 6 sniper. One of the best snipers in all of the world. Good morning, and thank you for your service.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for your support.
Always. 100%. Today is the 26th anniversary of the battle that became known in the movie Black Hawk Down. Can you take us through that?
Oh, wow. That's a long story, but I'll give you the abridged version. The part that the movie doesn't show that that you guys would probably be interested in is the fact that we had pretty much won in Somalia. SEAL Team 6's mission, my four guys, along with the CIA guys that were running the safe house, we had gotten all the intel that we needed to decimate the opposing warlords and, in effect, put an end to the famine, starving, just total corruption in the country. So I was kind of disappointed the film didn't show that. But we also found out about this new group of people that you guys read about in my book called Al-Qaeda. Once we pulled out, due to the, you know, never-ending press, popularity ratings of a president dropping 4%, et cetera, the Al-Qaeda people incubated and got stronger and eventually brought down our towers in New York. But the basic mission of being in Somalia was basically one. We had one bad day, which you guys know lives in infamy, called Black Hawk Down. That was October 3rd, 1993, and lost a really good friend there and 18 Americans. And then what we did is basically just pull out and say, okay, you guys go back to civil war and undo everything that we've done. So,
damn.
As you can tell, guys, I'm not really bitter, but basically the mission was a success. And most people, especially if all they've ever done is watch the movie, don't know that the mission was a success.
That's heartbreaking. I never knew that.
When we first got there, guys, the food was not getting out to the provinces and around town. It was being hijacked. And when you've seen people starving, and you've actually seen people who have starved to death, we had put an end to that. Everybody was being fed. Actually, on October 3rd, we had rounded up the 17 last ranking lieutenants for the warlord we were opposing, and we're on the way back to the compound when we got hit. Fought our way out of a hellish battle, as you can imagine. Still came out on top, and then we, basically folded up shop and left. I guess I am still a little bitter because, you know, I was shot three times in that conflict, almost lost a leg. It cost me my career. And that's why I felt it important to write the book and set the story straight. Although there's a lot more to the book, you guys know, there's a lot more to the book than Somalia. You know, the biggest thing that I get from the book, and when I still do speaking engagements today, are the people that come up to me and say, hey, you know what? I was suffering from survivor guilt, or I was suffering from PTSD, and I would never say anything because they were raised the way I was. A real man doesn't say anything. You suck it up, keep it in, and, you know, drink a fifth of Jack Daniels a day if you have to, which I did go through a phase doing that. But they come up to me and say, hey, you know what? You said it was okay to get help. You told your story, so I'm getting help. So that's the big thing that I take from the book, that, and as you guys know, my childhood, being adopted, abused, and having to go through a hellish childhood, I wanted to show people that no matter what, you can be adopted, you can be abused, you can be used as basically slave labor. But in this country, with the opportunities we have, you can rise to be anything. You can be a SEAL Team 6 member like I was. You can be a doctor like I am now.
Of the 18 snipers in SEAL Team 6, you became the best. How does that happen where they determine you're the best?
Well, what we do is, and that's the best at any given competition, okay? Not the best of all time or anything. What we do is we have a friendly little competition every year that we do with our counterparts, Delta Force. And once a year, we get our two best guys together, and we go compete against them and a bunch of other special ops guys. The year that I went to compete, I shot the best score. That's doing unknown distance ranges, rapid fire moving targets, pop-up targets, head-to-head hostage silhouettes, this whole course that you go through. You got to be careful saying you're the best in any special operations group, especially with SEAL Team 6. But on that particular competition, to go represent SEAL Team 6 for that year, I was the best then.
Do you have a shot in combat that was really, really hard that you're proud of that you made?
Yes. And I didn't let on about this shot for a long time because so much was made of it. If you guys remember in the book, when I'm over at Pakistani Tower and the Little Bird helicopters are coming in, dropping the Delta Force guys down on the compound where we're going to take out Osman, Otto Osman, the finance minister. A guy popped up with an RPG and was preparing to shoot at the Little Bird, the helicopters that were coming in. And I did a quick range on him. I estimated him to be about 1,000 yards away. So I aimed at him, center mass, like right about chest or whatever, and put in my 1,000-yard dope and elevation and shot. You know, it's a critical shot because if he shoots down that helicopter, how many people are in there that are going to die? So I hit the guy like right between the nose and the eyeball.
Ooh.
And the Delta Force guy saw that. And when I walked back into the compound the next day, man, they were just like high-fiving me, handing me a cigar, going, man, when we go in, we want you covering our ass, all that kind of good stuff. And so anyway, I didn't have the heart to tell them. I ranged that shot after I shot the guy. Now, remember where I hit him. I didn't have the heart to tell him that I wasn't trying to do a headshot. The guy ended up being only like 840 yards away instead of 1,000.
Sorry. I was going for his chest. How much time did you have to get that shot lined up?
3 to 5 seconds, maybe.
Wow.
That's from sighting to pulling the trigger.
Damn, not much.
But anyway, just remember that. I never told the guys that I wasn't trying to make the headshot until the book came out and they found out. And I got a couple of phone calls going, man.
I want the cigar back. I want that high five back.
And just so you know, most snipers would never tell on themselves like that, but I'm older and kinder and, you know, whatever now. So.
Honest, yeah, yes, exactly. An honest man.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. The book is called SEAL Team 6, Memoirs of an Elite Navy SEAL Sniper. And it's available anywhere books are sold. And we're linked up to howardwasden.com. Howard, thank you for your service and thank you for your time, brother. All right, 7 people have died and several injured in the crash of a B-17 at Bradley Airport yesterday. And Bridgeport Hospital say they have 3 patients, 1 with serious injuries, 2 minor injuries, all burns and multiple fractures. 10 passengers on the plane going for a joyride. And 3 crew members, no children on board. Here are excerpts from communications between the tower and the plane. It starts with the first sign of trouble.
Boeing 93012, we'd like to return to the field. November 93012, sorry, say again.
Bound out of 7,000 for 5,000 Airbus. Crash in their Embraer.
And what's the reason for coming back?
Sir? Got number 4 engine. We'd like to return and blow it out.
0012, Roger. You can proceed onto the downwind for runway 6. And you said you need an immediate landing?
We ain't got a chance, yeah.
0012, so I just want to make sure because we have jet traffic coming in. Can you go or do you need to be on the ground right now?
Possible.
Piedmont 4837, cancel approach clearance. Climb maintain 3,000.
Climb maintain 3,000, Piedmont 4837. We'll stay on this present heading.
Or 02, you could proceed however necessary for runway 6.
Okay, entering the downwind for runway 6, 93012.
Piedmont 4837 reaching 2,500, flight heading 150.
At 2,500, heading 150, Piedmont 4837. Approach runway 3803 to 5,000.
Roger, whoever's calling, just stand by for a second.
2505, descend to maintain 10,000.
10,000, Southwest 2505.
Shawcraft, Bradley Airport's closed for an aircraft incident. Envoy 3803, climb maintain 5,000, fly heading 090.
And tower beam on 4837. How long do you think the airport's closed? We are could be getting low on fuel.
I have no idea.
excerpts from Tower Communications yesterday. On the show now, Paul Colella from Derby. He used to be in the Air Force. Thank you for your service.
Hi, good morning.
Were you supposed to be on that plane yesterday?
It was a strange situation. I have two other brothers, and one brother is a bit adverse to anything like this, traveling in general, especially something like this. And therefore, the plan was going to be that we would, air quotes, kidnap him and have him go for a ride with us. And since I'm a plane sponsor, that kind of got a bit of a priority on flying on the aircraft.
Now, what is a plane sponsor?
We contribute money to the Collins Foundation, and since it's a fairly large amount of money, they allow us to travel on the aircraft and without any additional fees or anything like that. And so we just have to notify them that that's going on, and they make room for us and then get us on the plane.
Like a perk.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yep. So that was the overall plan. That his wife has had, my brother's wife's had some interesting experiences flying, so she does her best not to do that anymore and would never allow him to do it. So that was why the plan was going to be to kidnap him. We had planned this back in the spring, and for our schedules, it seemed like that was going to be the best day. However, there was a health emergency with one of the other family members, so that precluded everything going through.
You weren't meant to be on the plane,
seriously.
That's it. And I've been on that plane some 25 times.
Plane?
Yeah.
So it's a very personal experience for you.
It is. And what's interesting, and someone asked me about this yesterday, a friend of mine, and about how... why it was such a personal experience. And I had to say, you know, maybe this is what it was like for guys during World War II when they lost friends or lost an aircraft, because I know the pilot, I know the first, the mechanic. Obviously, if there's a loss of life of anyone in any situation, feelings about that, but it seems a little strange about an inanimate object like an aircraft. But people who have an affinity for World War II equipment, especially airplanes, would have a better understanding of what I'm saying about this particular aircraft.
When you heard that radio call and the pilot saying that there was problems with engine 4, does that mean anything to you?
Yeah, it's, and that's the part that's so confusing. Because this aircraft, with one engine out, even where it was on takeoff, and I heard some eyewitness reports about what they saw on takeoff in the engine, it's not that big of a deal. I mean, this aircraft can fly on three engines with the low weight load that it had yesterday with those few people, and still make it around and still come back. And during the war, these things were shot up. Engines were blown up, and it still made it across the channel and landed. So there was something else that was going on. And listening to the NTSB last night report about how it did come in contact with a piece of weather equipment near the runway, that idea of when he came back around, something else was going on besides the engine. And you know, maybe it was a health issue, but now we're into speculation.
Right.
You do tend to make a really quick turn sometimes to get back to the runway, and they're called short approaches. But it's just too strange. It wasn't anything in the communication with the tower that would lend you to believe that everything was going this bad that quickly.
It sounded to me almost like the landing was a good landing. The plane was on the ground, and then it hit that de-icing facility. Did you get the same thing from the reports you heard?
Yeah, and I looked at Google Earth extensively, and the de-icing facility, it's nowhere near the runway. I mean, you had to have something major go wrong.
Gotcha.
It couldn't have been the landing gear. The landing gear would not have allowed it to get that far down and off to the side. So that's why it's going to be a very interesting examination by the NTSB. And there is no such thing as a black box on these aircraft. And the people that would have been on the plane, their best survival would have been in the tail section. When you sit in these things, you actually sit on the floor of the airplane, and you sit facing each other across the aisle. And there's just one fabric seatbelt with a metal hook, very latest in 1940s technology. So everything that would have been forward of the tail, what you see in the pictures, it would have been very challenging for survival in that. So if the seven people who did perish were forward of the tail, that would make sense.
Yeah, that was the only part of the plane I could make out.
Still intact,
and all of the debris was the tail.
Yeah, one wing.
Paul, what was the history of that plane? Did it ever see wartime?
No, not at all. This was, when it was originally born, it was the spring of 45. So by the time it was completed and delivered, the need for it had greatly diminished. So the Collins Foundation, they do a wonderful job on finding older aircraft and restoring them for the purpose of the younger generations to have a good feeling of what these aircraft did and how they really changed everything during World War II. We were there, my brothers and I, we were there for D-Day this year, for the 75th anniversary. And I can tell you, the folks there in France and in England definitely know what B-17s were for and how they changed
right.
The war and the world. And what Collins does, well, this year especially, they had five aircraft. They had a B-17, this one, the B-24, B-25, in the bomber section, and they had two fighters. They had a P-40 and a P-51, and they would all travel together, not necessarily at the same time. The fighters typically would go first to the next destination to ensure that everything was ready, and then the bombers would come in. Sometimes, like the last flight I was on, the B-25 and the B-17 flew together in a semi-formation. And there's always a pretty good crowd. But no more.
Yeah. A listener called up earlier and said that the expression, the whole nine yards, comes from that plane, that it had a nine-yard ammo belt. And when the gunner would say to the person feeding the belt, "I need the whole nine yards," that's where that expression came from. Are you familiar with that? Does that
yeah,
sound
it's
right?
Really, it's really funny because where the ammo, what it was contained in, they were just wooden boxes, and they look at these things and they say, "What?" But these aircraft for the war were made to be functional and expendable. So you wouldn't put the latest metal containers in there. And the equipment that was used to hold the ammo was literally that long. And you had to fire in very short bursts because once you ran out, you know, there's not much for you to do. And the last thing you want to do is be stuck there while German fighters were approaching your section of the airplane.
Right.
That's how the whole thing started, the whole nine yards.
Thanks for coming on. Sorry you for are. Your loss. And you know, your sister-in-law is never going to let your brother get in one of those planes ever after this.
Nope.
You guys weren't meant to be on that yesterday.
Yep. That's certainly a way the life works out, doesn't it?
Yeah. Paul Colella of Derby. Used to be in the Air Force. Thank you for your service.
Thank
and
you.
I was supposed to be on that plane yesterday. Unbelievable. Thanks for sharing your story. Just so you know, if you hear a little distraction, we're testing the effects of alcohol on Ashley.
Hi, Jimmy.
And it's working, apparently. Yes, that's her.
Clearly, it works.
Yeah. Yes, it does.
Let me tell you, it works.
It's winning, Jimmy.
It's a public service to just let people know how fast it can happen and how you shouldn't get behind the wheel when you're drinking.
Exactly.
I admire Ashley for doing a public service. It's
Thanks,
very good of her.
Jimmy, you're great.
Yep, very good of her.
Now, have you ever, did you ever have a drinking problem?
No, I drinking was never my problem.
That was easy.
I love the way you answered that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, in the 70s I had issues, but that wasn't drinking issues.
Gotcha.
And I
So it did start with a D and an R, but it wasn't drink.
Gotcha. Right.
So you never. That's wild because you know
I've never been drunk.
Yeah. Wow. Never been drunk.
Really?
What?
Never been drunk. Never had a hangover. Never been drunk.
You've never been drunk?
No. I have had a glass of wine every once in a while, but that was it.
I'm drunk.
We know. We can tell. The world can tell.
Was there some? Did you watch someone in your family have a drinking problem, or how does that happen?
Well, my late brother had a drinking problem, but that's not how it happened. I just never liked the taste. Hey, I'm all for the buzz. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
I mean, I probably shouldn't say it, but I'm all for the buzz. It just never tasted good enough for me to get the buzz that way, so I always went the other way.
Gotcha.
I think the weird thing is that I'm confused that I'm talking to someone who's never been drunk, and I'm like, how does that happen?
Exactly, yeah.
I don't know.
You're a monk. Yeah.
You don't do it. Right. Let's talk about Kiss.
Yes. Kiss, we had Kiss 10 years ago today at Mohegan Sun Arena.
Look at that.
I saw that on my Jim Coppola Presents Archives page today. So Lou Rossi put his ticket up there, and I hadn't remembered that. And yesterday I pretty well secured a date for next summer at Xfinity. So
really?
I'm pretty happy about that. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah,
at
we
Xfinity.
Talked about it. It's their final tour. I convinced them that Connecticut's a big state. With all due respect to playing Mohegan Sun, there are other venues in Connecticut. Many people don't go to other venues, so let's bring them to Hartford. So they gave me the thumbs up, and hopefully today or tomorrow we'll actually put a date together.
Oh, that works big. So you would say that's, what, 99.1%?
99.1. Very awesome. Good. Yeah, you get your paycheck today.
Oh, what a percentage that is.
I see what you did there.
Ashley gets it, too.
I got that from the late, great Sam Tillery. He would do that all the time. All right, so that's exciting. Kiss.
Right, Sam Tillery, you had more tickets of mine than I even had.
Yep.
Jimmy is the only one, I think, that was at Sam's wake and heard all these beautiful stories and was actually angry.
Yes, I was angry not only that Sam had suddenly died.
Right.
But I was angry at what everybody was... The eulogies pissed me off. Because it was all about all the tickets they got from my shows. And I don't even know these people.
And I used to went, what?
Sam was great. He gave me all these tickets. Anytime I needed to go to a show, Jimmy sitting there.
With his program.
I'm sure Jimmy, because at the end they said, does anyone want to get up and speak?
Right.
That would have been interesting if Jimmy got up there and yelled at everybody.
You owe me money.
No, we love Sam very much.
I want my tickets back. Right.
Getting a bill. Which one of you bastards went?
Breaking news. Larry the Cable Guy performing at the Webster Bank Arena tonight.
That's so cool.
Amazing. Larry, did you bring a tranquilizer gun by any chance?
I'm telling you. She's had some good stuff in there.
Yes, she has.
Hi, Larry. I'm so happy you're here.
Well, it's good to be here. This is the first... do my headphones work or are they...
Volume control at the end of the cable?
Right. All right.
There you go. Oh,
I'm so sorry that I'm drunk for this, but I'm still so happy to see you.
You know, this is the first, honestly...
Yeah.
Ever since stuff started rolling for me, this is the first... Hey!
Ashley, why don't you come in here? So Larry doesn't have to turn
this
around.
This is the first morning show radio program that I have ever came in live since I started touring in probably 17 years.
Wow.
18 years.
Damn. Thank you. It's an honor.
Right.
Well, I tell you, I had a good time last time I was on here, but the selling point was golf.
Yeah,
we sucked in on that one.
Yeah, you know.
A nice course.
Yeah. Great river.
Yes.
And yeah,
we want it.
Fantastic.
We're not above bribing, no.
I believe it's the best, if not.
Well, I heard good things. You know, it's and you got great weather if you're a mushroom. So
yeah, exactly right. Exactly. You can tee off of them, yeah.
You know, my wife, you remind me what my wife was. I met my wife. I was working a House of Blues in Las Vegas, and my wife was a radio girl in Las Vegas.
Really? What did
she do?
At the rock station in Vegas.
That's awesome.
That's how I met my wife.
Really? So what, did you come in as a guest?
No, she, another radio station was promoting my show, and she was on the sister station, but her best friend worked at the station that was promoting my show, and
right.
I showed up, and she was just sitting there in a chair in my dressing room in the corner all by herself, hanging out with him. They were going to do the meet and greet and then leave and go do something else, and I just got to talking to her, and I was picking her brain. She's real quiet, but a funny. She was funny. She's a real dry sense of humor.
She is. Right.
She made me laugh. Beautiful. And yeah. She told me that she grew up on a 3,000-acre Black Angus cattle ranch.
Dang.
In a town of 45 in northern Wisconsin. And I grew up on a pig farm in a town of 1,200.
Wow.
In southeastern Nebraska.
You had a meal.
Before I moved to Florida. And we just hit it off. And I called her. I pursued her. I called her and finally figured out her name, her full name. And,
last year, right?
I called her. She would never.
It takes a while. Yeah, it takes a while. You got to work up to it.
I finally got a hold of her, and we talked every day when she's on the radio. I would call her after my shows every night when we did Blue Collar. I did my own stuff. I would call her
Good
every
job.
Night.
Wow.
And she came down to Florida to see me for a weekend. We got married a year later.
Nice. Awesome.
See that?
Yeah.
That's romantic. Great.
That works.
Yeah.
Very romantic.
And how long have you been married?
We've been married now for 15 years. 2003 is when we got married.
Yeah, 15 or 16?
No, 2005.
Crap, so 14, I don't do math.
14 years.
14 years.
14 years.
Married. Wow.
The only thing is she doesn't speak English, so the interpreter's always
yeah.
with her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Me neither.
No comprendo. No comprendo.
Really, she doesn't speak English?
Not a lick.
No.
She's 13 years younger.
Ashley doesn't speak English either.
No. She's drunkenese.
This morning, no. I'm so happy you're here. I'm very sorry that I'm not an A plus.
No, you're Larry. Awesome.
You are an A plus.
You are an A plus plus.
Larry, this is the first time you ever talked to a drunk woman, right?
actually, she's AA plus right now.
I'll bet you this isn't even the first time he's done it at 9:05 in the morning.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Normally, you know, music's playing and they're hollering last call.
Exactly.
No, my wife's 13 years younger than me.
Nice.
And I'll never forget the first time she told me her age, I almost choked on my pizza and dropped my game token.
Whoops.
I'll tell you what.
You know, Chuck E. Cheese, what are you going to do? You know what I'm saying?
Unbelievable. Yeah. But let me say this, though. You know what the bad thing about being married to somebody younger than you is?
What's that?
Nothing.
Okay.
Not a thing.
Older person, it's great.
Yes.
Yeah.
The younger person's like one.
The only thing that's odd about it is you're 14 years older, so... You know, the intimacy's a little weird, you know, because she's on fire. You know, I'm older.
And we're on pills.
So, yeah. So she's like, I'm like, hey, slow down a little bit. You know, this ain't a prison visit.
Exactly. We have our time.
Let's make this last.
Honey, this is our house. It's okay.
I'm going to be here. But it's good. Hey, it's good to stop in here.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, man.
I'm here with my buddy.
Ashley,
my buddy. My opening act is with me.
Hi.
You have to pee? Other side of the glass.
Nick Hoff is, I call Nick the best looking comedian in the business, because all the girls think he's really good looking.
You mentioned this during the radio interview, and
yes.
You're right, he is a good looking guy.
I know.
Let me see, turn around.
Sometimes funny.
I got it.
Sometimes funny. I don't like it. Turn around. Let me judge your beauty.
Wait.
Turn around. Let me look.
Yes.
Now I'm nervous.
You know,
turning around.
The next thing she's going to do is she's going to do what Larry did to the dogs at the dog show.
Oh.
Remember that?
Oh, my gosh.
What
yes.
Was
he was.
What?
He was at this fancy dog show, part of one of his shows.
Only in America.
Only in America. And he started squeezing their nuts.
That's what you do, right?
Yes.
Step up.
Well, most folks shake hands, but yeah.
They were showing me in this episode, and here's the thing about that show. I wanted to keep it all spontaneous, because I never knew what I was doing until the day I was there.
Uh-oh.
So when I got there, I said, so what are we doing today? They go, we're going to a dog show. And so I'm like, okay, so... I want to keep it spontaneous.
Just winging it. Yeah.
And so one of the things they do at the dog shows is they take the top breeds, the purebreds, and then they'll take them into the doctor's area. They're the veterinarian. And certain ones, they'll extract semen from them so they can keep the breed. You know, so if anybody wants, you know, a full-blooded...
Or
you know,
cocktail.
Who has to get that semen?
Right.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
So who's the semen collector?
She was showing me how to do it.
A girl named Sheila.
And so it was the weirdest thing. And she's like, and she's got to be 75, the woman do it. She's like, well, hold on to him. So I hold on to him. And
her,
so.
Her shaky hand came in handy.
Shaky hand.
I'm like, going, you got to do something. Put on a Richard Marx CD.
There you go, see?
Stick your finger in his hand now.
Whatever it takes. Buy a drink.
There was some stuff I did on that show, though, because you know, you're talking for 12 hours a day.
Yeah.
So I am leaving everything up to History Channel. Look, your standards and practices. Sometimes you just say stuff trying to be funny, and you go, well, that's not going to make the air, so they're going to cut that out.
Right.
So,
I'm going to do my thing, and then you guys edit it.
So sometimes I figured we've already got enough footage. So sometimes I literally would say stuff just to make my cameraman laugh, you know?
Yeah.
And that's long what day. They ended up using.
Well, right. See? And that was the magic.
I'm like, my mom's watching this show.
Right.
Mom, don't watch.
You touched more dog nuts in that second.
Yeah, really.
Than I've seen in my life.
When your mom calls,
floats your boat.
When your mom calls and goes, "What was you doing with the dog, honey? What was that you doing with the dog? I don't understand what you did. Your house had a dog's nuts. What's going on with that?"
Yes. Hey.
He got it.
Hey, who's on your shirt?
Oh, it's Boy Meets World. It's the best television show ever.
And some macaroni and cheese.
She just dropped mac and cheese on the floor.
Well, she's eating it out of the tray. So the tray's there for everybody.
Are you
she's
serious?
She's putting her saliva fork tray of
what?
Mac and cheese.
Ashley.
While you're talking to Larry.
I'm so sorry.
She thought no one saw. I saw all of it.
Now, when did Ashley start drinking? Have you been drinking on the show?
Yeah.
Her entire life.
All morning.
She started when she was 11.
Yes.
I had my first drink at 6:30, and I've been drinking gin and tonics with a couple of shots of Fireball, and...
is this just because you were asked to do that today, or you're just a major flaming alcoholic?
Number two.
Well,
go number two.
Yeah.
Right.
One and two. I'm going to go with all of the above.
Keyword flaming, yes.
Well, I'm going to get my picture with you before we leave, because when you pass away, I'd like to
remember. Exactly right. I knew her when, yes.
Larry the Cable Guy, Webster Bank Arena tonight with Nick.
Nick Hoff.
How did you guys meet?
Well,
on the road.
It was a sultry summer night.
We dated in the late 80s.
I remember the moon was right.
No, Nick, I'm originally from Nebraska. I grew up in a small town in Nebraska. And
this doesn't sound really sexy.
It doesn't.
I was looking for 70s.
Barry White, go with
Barry
White.
I was looking for 70s porn.
I moved to Florida. And, you know, River.
Ooh.
There it is. Ray Romano. When we were in Lake Tahoe, Ray Romano would always start to tell a story. And he'd go, oh, man. This is a great story. And then he would always say this. He'd go, now remember, this was pre-AIDS.
Why?
So you're like, wow, this is going to be a heck of a story.
Right.
No, but I moved to Florida. I moved to Florida when I was 15. But Nick, I'm in Nebraska again now, but I love Nebraska because I grew up there. I was born and grew up there. But Nick's from Nebraska. And when I was needing my other opening act I had forever, he went on to do other stuff. So I needed an open act. Nick was coming up through the ranks. And so I said, hey, I saw his video, and I said, hey, can I get Nick? And so we have the same manager, so Nick travels.
Oh, that helps.
There you go, see?
Right, same manager.
And he's a golfer. Yeah. And he likes to golf.
Oh, right. So you got it. So Great River. So Nick, guys are golfing today at Great River?
Yes. Well, yeah. Nick's holding the cad. Nick's caddying for him.
No.
I'm like the apparently, Ashley's not the only one that's drinking. All right. And then you got a whole crew here. Who are these guys?
Well, two are manager, and other two are work with me.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, they make sure that we're good.
Right. They make sure you're on time.
I am one of those people.
The guy talking to his lapel good. Right there. Yeah.
You need a person that makes sure you're good.
One guy's got earpiece. Earpiece.
It's good to hear a radio station playing good old rock and roll music.
Too. Thank you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Classic rock.
You don't hear it much anymore. You know, I worked with, did some dates with Styx. Tommy Shaw and I are buddies.
Were you guys opening for Styx?
Met him. Yeah. No, we actually were double billed.
Really?
I went out first, did about an hour and 10 minutes, hour and 15 minutes, and then he went up second, did an hour and a half. So it was like a double bill.
Wow. What a night that would be.
Seriously. It was fun. It was
you laugh and rock out.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was rock and comedy. It was fun, but I was when I was on there, I said, the only difference, I love Styx, and the only difference between classic rock now and then is backstage 35 years ago, it smelled like pot everywhere.
Right.
Now it smells like pot and Ben Gay.
Right. medical marijuana, yes.
You had that kick. You had that awesome video of you and them singing that. What was that song that you guys were singing together?
Oh, we were singing Renegade.
Yeah, okay. Dude.
Is that on
awesome
YouTube?
A cappella.
No, it's just on his phone.
Do you have it in your phone now?
Back in the green room, we were singing at Acapella. I don't know if I can find it.
Really?
I mean,
that was awesome, though.
I can try to hear those guys singing it there, and then...
Just seeing you try to keep up, that was amazing.
I went to see Asia in Vegas.
Ooh.
And here was what was cool. At the end of the night, I got to go in the lobby and take a picture with the cardboard cutouts of the original members.
Nice. But they're actual size, though.
Steve and Sandy Hook, his daughter's a big fan of yours. Hey, Steve, you're on.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
What up? Larry the Cable Guy.
Yes, sir.
Hey, big fan, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, right.
unfortunately, I can't make it to your show tonight in Bridgeport because I'm spending the night with my daughter, who's a huge fan of yours from all the Cars movies.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God,
well,
yes.
You tell her thanks. That was a great time, that Cars movie. You know, it's funny. When people, I see their parents walk by and they go, hey, he was in Cars. The kids kind of look at me and I go, boy, I tell you what, you made me happier than a tornado in the trailer park. Boy, those kids, they just light up. I mean, it's pretty cool. That movie was great.
I love it. And I do apologize for Ashley this morning.
Yes,
I know.
We all do.
I'm sorry.
We all do.
What's your daughter's name?
Her name is Olivia.
Can you say hi to Olivia?
Darn right. Hey, Olivia, this is Matey. Light tomato without the tuh. Boy, I tell you what, if you ever get to Radiator Springs, you and me do some backward driving. You're Larry and Olivia. Or Mater.
I think Larry found Ashley's stash.
Oh, yes. My God, I'm so excited.
It's a contact.
All right, Steve, that'll be up on WPLR.com if you want to grab it.
Oh, that's great. You guys are the best. Thanks a lot.
No, see you later.
Thank you, my brother.
You and me is best friends.
How does that go when you're voicing a movie like that? Do you is it all script or ad lib? You guys do the voice first and then they draw it?
It was script. Obviously, it was all scripted out. But when I first started, I was nervous to do anything different other than the script. But John Lasseter was such a cool guy. And I said, hey, I don't think I'd say it like that. I think I'd say it different. Like, I think there was a line that was like, hey, let's go to that restaurant and get something to eat, and so he said, oh, you want to say, so I'd be like, boy, I tell you what, my stomach's just a-churning, let's go get some of them vittles in there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he would like it, so he would let me fray if I wanted to, so we would take the original cut like it was written, and then he'd say, hey, go ahead and play around with it if you want to, so then I'd do three or four takes doing something different. And generally, they would take them, you know. I was really happy they let me put the Get Her Done in there because I didn't know if they would.
Yeah, it's big. Gotta have
How old were your kids when that movie came out?
Man, well, my little boy was just born. He was a newbie. He was born in 2006. The movie came out in 2006. My little girl's 2007. So Cars 2 was the one that they really got into because they were so young for the first one.
Right.
That's the one that featured Mater, right? That was pretty much all you.
Right.
Yeah. But you know, people, that was kind of its own little deal. You know, we did these things called Mater Tales, and they were really popular in video and on the family channel. But that was where it was like Mater would come out and go, if I'm lying, I'm crying, you know, and then he'd tell a story, and then McQueen would go, come on, Mater, that's not true. And I go, yes, it was true. You was there too. You know, and then he was added. They got really popular, so that was kind of like Cars 2 was kind of like just one big, long Mater tale.
Right. Because
I kind of consider Cars 3 to be the sequel to Cars 1.
Yeah.
And Cars 2 kind of went in its own little direction.
It was kind of like a character development piece for...
Yeah.
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 So I thought that was the difference between the three. You know what I always thought it was funny?
You didn't work golf into that, though, right? Got to work golf into it. Somehow the car's playing the golf.
Yeah.
No. But he has no hands.
I don't know how.
Mater has no hands.
He's got the tie cable.
Use the hook.
I got the toe hook. I guess I could swing it and hit a ball with the toe hook.
Exactly. Right.
I don't know. I hope. I ran into Owen Wilson not long ago, and I said, hey, Owen, you think we'll do Cars 4? He goes, I hope so. I can't do his voice, but he was, you know.
Phil, what do you have?
Oh, mama, I've been free of all my life from the
Oh, they found it.
This is cool.
Wow.
Hey, man, it's coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
The genius of the news is out. They finally found me. A renegade who had.
Oh, you know these words. You can't fake that. Yeah.
For the bounty.
Wow. Just going to roll with that one.
Nice job, Phil. Is that on the internet, or did you just hack into Larry's phone?
No, that is on the Styx official Facebook page. We had a tribe member call in. He follows them and saw it back in March. He's like, it's definitely there. You should go look. I was like, nice. Okay.
Man, eyes everywhere.
Yeah, that was fun, right? Man. I love those classic rock bands.
Larry, the cable guy's in studio, and Ashley is drunk.
Yes, she is.
You know what, though? She's good for morning show. I mean, this makes for fun listening.
Exactly.
You know? It really does.
For today, yeah.
I think she's fantastic.
Yeah. We'll give her a mustache.
You always do.
And the, hey! Well, you know what? You were doing good until you did the mustache.
Oh, thank you. I take that back.
Most of the dumbass news, I think, doesn't it come out of Florida?
Exactly.
Yes.
I was just about to tell you that, but you probably know that.
I lived in Florida for 30 years in Sanford, and I started in West Palm Beach, Florida.
But West Palm Beach.
I love Florida's my second home. Of course, I'm a huge Nebraska guy, and I live there. But Florida, something about it, I love living in Florida. But I got to be honest, it's true. Any kind of vagrant or weirdo is down there.
Yeah, Florida and Ohio second.
Exactly right, yeah.
So we're going to let you go, and you're going to go off and play some golf at Great River. And by the way, they rolled out the red carpet for you guys.
So thank you, Great River.
They moved some stuff around and got you guys
in. Well, that's nice. And we love playing golf. I used to hate golf. I got into it about 9 years ago. And, man, I really enjoy it. Boo Weekly. Boo got me into golf.
That's a cool name.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tried it a long time ago.
Drink.
Do you know who that is, Phil?
Yeah, he's on the PGA Tour.
I'll drink a Boo Wiggly.
Yeah. You are a Boo Wiggly.
Boo Wiggly.
Give me one Boo Wiggly, please. Right. Extra Wiggly. Extra Wiggly.
If there's a time of year where he becomes Boo Wiggly, it's definitely near Halloween.
Yes. Yeah. That's the time to make Boo Wiggly.
Right. Exactly.
Sounds like a ghost porn star.
We just had Joe LaCava in studio.
Who?
Joe LaCava, Tiger Woods caddy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What'd he have to say?
He said hi. Hi, you guys.
Boo Wiggly! Boo Wiggly!
I drink a Boo Wiggly.
No, Boo's a good dude.
So what's happening tonight at Webster Bank Arena?
Well, we got a big show tonight. We just were at an arena last night in Virginia, had a great show.
And I saw that. How do you guys get done with a show? Would you get right on the bus and drive here?
We finished the show, hop on the plane, head up here.
Wow.
And all of us hate flying, so we're always scared to death.
Oh, thank
we get
God.
On the plane.
I hate flying, too. Simpatico. Woo!
I hate it. Oh. And so I almost didn't make it. The airline wouldn't let me bring my emotional support stripper with me on the airplane.
Well, there was no pole on there. For
shame.
Yeah.
So,
singles.
We're here tonight.
Does she have to wear a special vest?
She does. An orange vest which comes off,
just
by the way.
Vest,
it's an orange vest that rips off from the front.
And dollar bills coincide, yes.
And then tomorrow we're in Pennsylvania, Lorraine in Pennsylvania. And then I'm heading out to play in Boomer Wells. David Wells has a golf tournament out in San Diego, and he always plays in mine. He's really good to me. Oh, such a good guy, David Wells. So I'm going to play in his golf tournament. And he owes me, too, because he had his golf tournament and forgot to check my schedule. And Nebraska is playing Northwestern in Lincoln, and I have not missed a home game in 15 years.
Damn.
So I am missing the Northwestern game for Boomer.
Oh, wow. So that's a friend.
You know
right
what
there.
I think you should do tonight? Knock a couple of golf balls into the audience.
Yeah, chip shots.
You should. You should get little foam balls
chip shots,
and
yeah.
sign them and just like as your clothes
are. No,
closer,
no, no. It's a real one. Idea.
No, real balls.
Right, and then you sign the knot.
Balls. Real balls. You sign them. Who wants a golf ball?
You sign the knot in their head.
I have a feeling that'll go viral.
Exactly. The courts will have it.
Thank you so much for coming in, man.
Thank you
so
much.
I know it's a big deal, but over like 15 years or 18
well,
years since you've been.
I haven't been. We haven't had time, so I haven't stopped in. You know, I started doing all this with morning radio. That's
right.
How
yeah.
I built my name around. And I love morning radio. It was so good to me. And it really sucks. I had never been able to go back into one. So this is the first morning radio show I literally have gone into probably since 2002.
That's amazing.
It's an honor.
Yeah, thank you.
So now we know. anything you want from Larry, the cable guy, you just have to dangle golf in front of him.
Exactly.
When we told him what a great course Great River was, he sounded interested, right?
Yeah,
I was
like,
there.
At first he was like, yeah, okay, maybe we'll come in, but we're busy. We're on the bus.
Yeah.
And, you know, we do shows, and we're busy people. And I'm like, Great River, one of the greatest places to golf. And he's like, what?
Hey, you know, it was amazing.
You know, it's funny. I had another interview after yours when I called you up. It was a paper interview, and I blew it off because I was trying to get a hold of my manager to call you guys.
Next year, we'll get him clubs.
I love it. Anytime you come around, we will get you whatever golf game.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, you're going to love Great
River. Drive the cart.
You guys are fun. I appreciate you inviting me. And keep her on here. This is for good radio.
Yeah. Awesome. At least another week, man.
Thanks, Larry.
Yeah.
I'm Larry the cable guy.
Nick, she'll be out of here. I give her a month.
This was the Jazz and AJ podcast. Thanks for getting through the whole damn thing. Subscribe now and please rate and review us. Unless you have terrible things to say, then please don't. Also, share this podcast with friends. Jazz and AJ in the Morning happens weekdays from 5:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. out of New Haven, Connecticut, on the mighty 99.1 PLR.